Throughout the beginning of 2019, we as a worshiping congregation together, we have begun a task that is as monumental as it is foundational. We have begun this year looking for God. We've been driven by a desire named simply, I want to believe in God. The conversation I shared with someone over a lunch. And as I've mentioned this phrase over these last few weeks, I have heard a chorus of voices joining in. Me too. Yeah. Yeah, that rings true for me. I want to believe in God too. Hey, Brad, can we talk about that I want to believe in God thing? So many people have joined in this conversation naming, we want to believe in God. Folks of every age, folks of every background, folks of every, we'll call it perceived holiness. I wasn't sure how to phrase that last one, but this honest longing to experience the divine takes root in all of us. Throughout this entire conversation, my premise as a preacher has been that God shows up. The faith and hope that God shows up is also my premise as a pastor. Now, you may not consider these two titles to be very different, preacher and pastor, but I am very aware of these two different roles in their uniqueness as I serve as a clergy person. I mean, yes, there is certainly overlap, but preaching is about proclamation. Pastoring is about tending to people. Now, let me tell you, God shows up. Oh, that preaches well. I mean, it is succinct. It's a memorable phrase. It engenders interest and hope, and it looks good on the cover of a bulletin. God shows up. It preaches well. But when you're sitting with someone who is dealing with the death of a loved one, when you're holding hands with someone who's telling you about a diagnosis that has no good ending, when you sit with a person or with a family who is wrestling with addiction, things that preach well don't always translate to moments such as these. It is difficult moments, these moments when we find ourselves questioning the world, that we doubt are the strength of our relationships, moments when we are uncertain about our very selves. These difficult moments are the moments in which we most need God to show up. These are the moments that we cry out with sighs too deep for words. I tell you, some of the most honest prayers ever uttered do not have words. But they are the gasps and moans and sighs of people who don't know what else to say. These moments that we don't just want to believe in God. We need God to be with us. And so I think it's worth asking, does God show up in the difficult times? Having walked with so many of you through the varied storms of life, having held your hands, having lifted your names in prayer, having cried with you, in addition to having waited for the dawn of my own dark nights of the soul, in these very difficult and real life moments that I have been honored and humbled to be present to, even staring into some of the most difficult and scary things life will ever bring, I can tell you without hesitation or condition that yes, God shows up. Now, understanding God's love and grace to be enduring and ever-present, I start with the simplest of premises. God shows up in the difficult moments because God has already and always been there. It's just that during the difficult moments, there's often less in the way for us to see it. This truth was best described to me through the Celtic theology of thin places. I love this understanding of thin places, this idea that God's kingdom, a reality in which we can know the fullness of the divine and all that God is and desires, that reality is always in our midst, in, around, and through everything. The thing is, if it's here, there are layers of distraction and interference and all of that human stuff that gets in the way that keeps us from experiencing and knowing what God's true presence is. But Celtic spirituality names that there are moments in life when those layers get stripped away and the threshold between us and God's kingdom gets so thin that we can touch the divine. Moments like these have been traditionally held as things like birth and death. Moments of deep honesty with someone we love, or even moments of deep honesty with ourselves. Weddings, baptisms, times we must confront our mortality. These are thin places. And when we must confront life's most difficult realities, for all of their complexity, we find ourselves often reaching a point of letting go. Not so much as in giving up. No, no, not giving up. Instead, letting go is a form of releasing. When we release so much of the other stuff that once we see what we're facing, we realize the other things aren't that important and don't need to occupy our time and our worry. And suddenly, we're left with not as much in front of us except who we are and the divine presence. Things have become thin. These thin moments are often accompanied by phrases like, "What now? I can't do this. It just hurts too much. I need help." These phrases are also accompanied usually by the ugliest of all cries. And when everything else starts to fall away, we can find that there is a sacred presence that remains. It's that promise that God has made since the very beginning. I invite you to hear God's commitment to us as people, as spoken through the prophet Isaiah in Robert Alter's translation of Isaiah. "And now thus says the Lord, your creator, Jacob, your fashioner, Israel, do not fear, for I have redeemed you. I have called you by name, you are mine. Should you pass through the waters, I am with you. And should you pass through rivers, they shall not overwhelm you. Should you walk through fire, you shall not be singed, and flames shall not burn you. For I am the Lord your God, Israel's Holy One, your rescuer. I have paid ransom for you. You are precious in my eyes. You are honored, and I love you. I have put people in your stead and nations instead of your life. Do not fear, for I am with you." This is God's presence in the thin places shared to us through the prophet Isaiah, but we also will hear it in our closing hymn this day when we sing, "Do not be afraid. I am with you. I've called you each by name. Come and follow me. I will bring you home. I love you, and you are mine." This is the promise that God shows up. But we needn't reach rock bottom to find that thin place. Even when life feels thick still, even when we are still wrestling with the realities of grief and loss and disappointment and fear, even in the midst of all of that, God is present, calling to us and claiming us. And to help you see where, I'm going to need you to acknowledge your needs, which is something that difficult moments tend to bring out. Difficult moments make us aware of so much. Specifically, difficult moments generate feelings, strong feelings. Feelings that will tell us something about ourselves if we can listen. And not just listen to other people or to a preacher. I mean, listen to ourselves and what we are feeling. But the thing is, we don't always have a vocabulary for it, which is why we actually printed out and have for you these lovely, colorful feeling wheels. If you didn't get one on the way in, please grab one on the way out. I know it seems a little bit bright and colorful to talk about life's difficult moments, but we wanted to provide some vocabulary for you. This resource comes to us from the Center for Nonviolent Communication, a group who recognizes that if we can pay attention to our needs, we can engage people in a healthier way. But this whole wheel is about helping us articulate how it feels to have our needs met or unmet. I mean, I do want you to have words for when things are going well also. So do check out the "when my needs are met" side for some very nice words. But on the left side of this wheel, you will find a plethora of options to name and describe the feelings that occur when our needs are not met. These are words that can help us describe the most difficult of moments. Because being able to put how you are experiencing the world into words is essential. In fact, one of the best definitions of trauma I have ever encountered is that trauma is that which we cannot narrate or put into words. The stuff we can't put into words is hard to handle. Now, sometimes it's because we are not ready, and I respect that space, and I respect that need, and I invite you to always find someone to be with you in that process. But sometimes we can't put things into words simply because we don't have the vocabulary. So many times I've sat with people and said, how are you? And they say, I don't even know where to start. I just don't have the words for this. So I want you to have more words, because your feelings are real. Your feelings are valid, and your feelings are worthy of being named. I mean, God shows up when we feel devastated. God shows up when we feel terrified. God shows up when we feel enraged. God shows up in these moments and all of our moments, all of these words too, because these words, these feelings that our lives are speaking, they speak to our needs as people. In the difficult moments when we name our feelings, we are becoming aware of our needs and our longings. And recognizing our needs and our longings, recognizing these things is a moment of recognizing our worth. When you say, I feel despair, when you can put that into words, you are acknowledging how you feel and how you wish you could feel. You are acknowledging that you are worthy of hope and purpose. When you say to yourself, I feel regretful, you are acknowledging that you are worthy of compassion and forgiveness to step from that feeling to a place of your needs being met. And when you can see yourself as worthy, you are seeing yourself as God sees you. Just as God spoke through Isaiah, you are precious in my eyes. You are honored. I love you. This is how God sees you. And when we can name our feelings and recognize our needs, we can see ourselves as God sees us. Because God stirs within us in the difficult moments, longing for us to know our worth. When we shout angrily at the sky, yelling at God, I don't deserve this, the God I know hears us and responds back, I know, and I'm glad that you know it too. God wants us to know we do not deserve to have our needs unmet. Now, this does require a brief moment to remind you, God does not cause bad things to happen. God does not cause natural disasters. God does not afflict people with disease. God does not burden you with just this side of more than you can handle. God does not need another angel. We can start listing the platitudes that people seem to use because they don't know what to say, so then they make up some sort of phrase that might think you feel better for a second, but really just makes God into an awful being. God does not cause bad things to happen. Now, this can be hard to accept, because if God doesn't cause it, then we have to acknowledge that most of the time, we don't know why these things happen. And that is frightening. In fact, that is frightening and terrifying and makes me feel helpless and scornful and reluctant and furious. It makes me feel a lot of things to realize that we cannot control this world and keep bad things from happening. But when we encounter life's difficult moments, when we encounter the kind of moments that leave us in tears, the God I know shows up and cries alongside us, because God knows we are worthy of a better life. God knows that we are worthy of a life in which all of our physical and mental and emotional and spiritual needs are met. You're worthy of your needs being met. And when we can recognize that, when we're longing not just for easier times, but for a fulfilling, meaningful life, when we can see ourselves the way God sees us, God has shown up, illuminating to us our own intrinsic value, helping us recognize we are worthy. Do not be afraid. I am with you. I've called you each by name. Come and follow me. I will bring you home. I love you, and you are mine.